really throughout the Southwest.
Right. So, was for Chicano Studies, and it was for
administration. It was like developing frameworks and models for Chicano administrators.
Right.
For Chicano programs.
Right.
We kind of looked at how do you transition people from college into the professions.
Right.
And one of the things we did uniquely was develop a Latina women in management internship program.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a real exciting program. We took 30 Latinas back from California to D.C.
Mm-hmm.
We had them do internships. And all those women are really something else. It's
wow.
interesting what they've done. But we developed those kind of training programs.
Right.
So it was more like exposure at a professional level.
Right.
And so we were involved with that.
So, were there any things on like college education and Chicanas, or because I think I've run across some stuff.
Probably
Chicana studies.
Probably, I don't
really
you know.
Any stuff. Which I mean, people are still struggling to get those classes, you know. Because I think it was passed really early that to get a Chicano studies emphasis, that you had to take the Chicana class. And half the time those aren't, I mean, at Long Beach, the whole time I was there was never offered, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I think it's gotten better, but.
Hmm. Has anybody mentioned to you about Mary Lou? Mary Lou, the married, yeah. And she married Sandoval. She married Frank. Because she was really a founder of UMAS, and it's just that she never left the woman model. She would never leave. She wouldn't go against the guys.
Right.
But she was very involved.
I think only Anna has mentioned, she just says there were women who were, like, feministas, and there were women who were loyalists. And
yeah, that's true. And Mary Lou was a loyalist, but Mary Lou, she didn't know it, but she was a feminist, you know?
You know, I think I went to college with one of her kids.
Really?
And they were in La Raza.
Because there's only two kids. They had Francisco, and then they had Sandoval.
Mm.
And then there was Marisol.
I don't know. I think so. But at the time when I started this project, they were really kind of against it. The La Raza Students Association.
Really?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be crazy?
Because mm-hmm. I think it splintered off and went its own direction. And
splintered from what?
From UMAS, from my job.
Oh.
So when I asked, you know, because I first started interviewing Anna, then people were like, no, she wasn't that important, and these other women were. And there was still a sense of tension around that history.
Huh.
So she's around still, right?
Yes, in Long Beach, somewhere.
Right. So Mary Lou. Hernandez.
What was it, Hernandez, and she married Frank Sandoval. So I think it's Mary Lou Sandoval.
Right. I went to school with a Frank. I don't remember his last name.
Was he involved with drugs? Because eventually he had some real problems.
The son?
Drugs, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know, I don't want to slander him, but yeah.
But I remember he was in college for a long time.
Really?
It took us all a long time to get it. I mean, I was there for 6 years. You know, and he was there probably for nine.
Yeah, well, you get involved, and that's
it.
The only way I was able to get out, I had to break it.
So you left. How did you get hooked up to go to D.C.?
I had a boyfriend, Frank Sanchez. And Frank was already in D.C., and he encouraged me to come back there, and I got an internship with the Civil Rights Commission.
Right.
And I stayed there 2 years. And it was during the Vietnam War as well. So it was a very exciting time. Also the Chicano movement. So there was a lot of activism going on back east.
Right.
So that was a really good experience.
Right.
And
when was the National Council founded?
I don't know, but they were just being kicking off.
Wow.
Yeah, I was involved with them, and the Chicanos really were close back there. A lot of my friends today I met back east,
right.
You know, throughout the nation.
Right.
I don't know if you ever know Tony Burciaga. Jose Antonio that just died. It's very, very, very good friend of mine. Yeah. We met back east, and his wife, Cecilia Preciado. Yeah, there was, and then Raul Seguire and Rick, I don't know, I forgot Rick's name, but they're all still very active at different levels.
It's sad, you know, like people work for liberation and 20 years of working for justice, and it turns out to be like healthcare issues that stop us, you know, stop us a lot of times.
Well, I'll tell you what's really sad to me is all the years we've been, and like I said, we took it very serious, all the years, and sweat and tears we put into setting up Mechas and Chicano studies and, you know, EOPs and, you know, getting our kids, our youth into school, because that's really the key. Now with 209 and this whole anti-affirmative movement, I mean, it's just, it's almost like you feel like it was for naught. It's very, very unsettling that's happening, and you almost feel totally, I feel impotent. I just feel impotent in terms of, there's nothing you can do now. I mean, I did what I tried. I did what I did because I believed in it. I still believe in it. And to just be now...
It was dismantled like almost overnight. Just like that.
Exactly. After so many years. And I think I was even more chagrined when I went to Long Beach State and I saw the students that were brought onto campus. They were more students that made it without Mecha. Who made it without EOP. And I had long talks with different people on campus and I was really saddened that, you know, the programs were driven by those people that are going to produce success, and it wasn't people like us. I mean, Anna and all of us, we were all marginal students. We went the junior college route to the four-year college route, and then, I mean, we had never gotten to college direct, and we were finding that all these students they would take, they already had to have a certain GPA, and they had to have, I mean, college prep courses. I mean, none of us even knew that was in high school, because we were tracked. So I was really saddened to see what we created didn't really address what we initially sought out, and that was to get the students that would not be able to get into college get in. And
I mean, in some ways, I've worked with this AOP for, well, not SAA, right? Mm-hmm. Or the EOP office. So, but every year since I've been in Santa Cruz, and it's hard. I mean, there was reform needed because a lot of times it got the middle class students of color. So there was some kind of shifting that was needed to be done, but that doesn't mean it needed to be dismantled. And that's a whole different.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're right. It's yeah. The depth is greater. But I mean, our group, we used to go out and recruit in high schools, and we'd get the Tecatos. We had a big prison group on campus. We did. It was crazy, man. But we had all the rejects in society we brought onto the campus. Because, you know, we really fell. It was really societal and economic structures that put us in those conditions. We used to go to the prisons. We used to give seminars. And we really believed that the underclass was there not by choice but by design. And we wanted to give them a bridge or get them into school. And get that opportunity.
It's, I mean, that's the key now, because all the cuts in education are going straight into building prisons.
Yeah.
Like, there's such a link between the prison industry right now in California and the cuts in education.
And if you go visit those institutions, all there are in them are Mexicans and blacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The majority. It's like, are we genetically criminals or what?
No.
You know? So you go, why then? I mean, it's just... It's too institutionalized. Mm-hmm. Where we are and why we are what we are.
That's what Angela's working on that now.
Hmm?
She's doing prison work now.
Who is?
Angela Davis.
Oh, really?
She's like TA for all her punishment and race and gender classes. She does women in prison.
So, oh, yeah. So. It's all. I think it's more economics and racism involved than why we're there, you know? Mm-hmm. It's very sad.
So just to kind of wrap up then, because I think our hour's probably done, is that do you just remember, Can you remember any kind of changes through the 70s that were important to mark historically? As far as, you know, Chicana activism or women's activism, or, I mean, what was the relationship? You said that the kind of third world coalitions that happened didn't last as long, but what was your experience through the 70s working with, did a woman of color coalition stay together, or how was that worked out? Was it, did it happen through the UN conference, or?
Yeah, I think it continued on, definitely. As I shared with you, once we were in our various professions, we still were active in women's movements and women's conferences, and got behind campaigns, selected campaigns around women's issues. I think significantly... curriculums and classes, like what Anna was teaching, was an outcome of that. There were publications, I think, that came about because of that, that would not have otherwise. Materials, even with a women's group, you know, were looked at more biculturally and linguistically, needed to be address. I mean, they could not develop a manual, a self-help manual, without being in Spanish. Mm-hmm.
Did you work cross-regionally? Do you remember? You said you were, like, because I've been talking to Martha Cotera. I don't know.
Yeah, I know Martha from Texas.
Yeah.
She used to be in Texas. Yeah, we worked.
Texas,
yeah.
Daughter,
oh, yeah, Martha.
My daughter goes to Stanford, too.
So oh, yeah. Mm, wow.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, Martha was, wasn't she a librarian?
Mm-hmm.
She started as a librarian. Oh, yeah, we worked with women through all over,
mm-hmm.
Colorado, New Mexico, you name them, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, that was after?
After
Long Beach State?
Yeah.
Yes, after EJAS.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like, you know, our involvement into the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember that at this, Anna had said that this was, you know, this was kind of a regional paper, LA-based,
mm-hmm,
or Long
Beach-based? Mm-hmm.
And that at the Houston conference, you were all planning to make this the national paper, or there was a discussion that that should be like a national voice for Chicanas, because there wasn't really, I mean, Regeneración had a lot of women's issues, but it wasn't a women's paper necessarily, and so there, she said that there was discussion of that, but then after Houston was such a painful experience for people that it took a while.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Lana remembers a lot. I don't remember that.
She remembers, like, details of, like, platforms and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, were you around for when Encuentro Femenil was started?
Mm-hmm.
You were part of the first
group? Yeah, uh-huh.
And the idea was the same, just to document what you guys were
mm-hmm,
doing?
Mm-hmm. I think I wrote in that one.
Yeah.
I think
you did, too.
I was more caught up in the facts. I've always been a facts person. I think Anna was more a philosophical, you know, spiritual type person. And I wanted to know, well, how many Latinos, you know, applied, and how many Latinos finished, and how many Latinos went on, you know. I was always wanting to know, because I somehow couldn't grasp what had happened. Like, I told you about the prisons. Well, how many of us are in there, you know, and what's the facts, you know? I mean, we see certain things. Can we verify the reality, our reality? So not that I was a statistician, I was just more factual oriented, and principled, I guess, principled oriented. But I had a lot of male friends that didn't like Anna,
mm-hmm.
and that was real hard for me because
because
I had to choose, and I didn't want to choose. Why should I give up my male friends?
Right. I mean, why didn't they like Anna? I could understand.
Well, they were threatened. They were threatened by her, and they saw her as going against them. They took it real personal. That was a big statement in the movement. Don't take it personal, you know. Don't take it personal. And everybody took everything personal, you know. It's like everything was on the tip of our, you know, our skin. And so Anna, man, would just take them on.
Thank you.
And it was okay if we were taking on the system or taking on, you know, the enemy, the mm-hmm. church or whatever. But when we turned around and took our men on,
mm-hmm.
that became almost like, what do you call it when you're a traitor?
Yeah, traitors.
We were looked as traitors.
Malinches.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were called. And probably the only sense of why I maintained friendship is because I went to D.C. and left them.
Erin Lee on the phone? With the city? Returning your call.
Okay. Can I call her right back?
So that it was hard on your female friendships too, right? Because it was so...
Well, I never grew up either, but it was really hard. They couldn't always be around together at the same time and place. And a lot of these guys became like the institutional leaders, and we became the ancillary kind of people.
Right. Because, I mean, I noticed that in Chicano studies these days. You know, most of the women are one or two generations after your guys' generation.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. But there are, I mean, there are some that made it.
The what?
That made it, but they would have to be warriors, you know, to have made it through that. Like, I always think, what would have happened if Anna would have stayed in Chicano studies? That would have been... Okay. I wonder if there's anything else to wrap up.
What I'd like to do is get go to my boxes I have and pull them out for you. Mm-hmm. And see if there's any, you know, plus juggling the memory of some key people. Not that you want to interview any more people, but there's, you know, some other women that were involved.
Okay.
I mean, Mari Lou was not a feminist, but she was definitely a leader.
Right. I should find
her. And she probably won't be real friendly. She wasn't friendly then, and I hear she's worse now. She was really not very friendly.
Okay. I should have done it when I was at Long Beach State. It would have been more easier, probably.
Yeah.
But I would have been younger and stuff, too. I would have really helped.
No, you still are young. I want to find this guy's name for you. Because I think he writes for a paper now. He's a writer. The only two that was a feminist with us. Mm-hmm. Anna would know his name. But we're very close.
It's good that I've stayed in touch with her because I started interviewing her when she wasn't on her medication for her.
But I
remember it was off and on, off and on.
Oh, yeah, she...
But I think it's real hard, too, because some of this was really painful. And so that, you know, makes your memory real, like... Like, some of the interview was just survival. And she was just surviving, and that's all she remembered.
Mm-hmm. No, I think for most of us it was pretty painful. Because it was against, kind of like against yourself.
Right. So how did you do it? You just stuck to your principles about what you knew was right, or...
Well, you rely on friendships like Anna and other women that think like you, people think like you, and you just, I guess what you said, I mean, you know right from wrong. You know, I just feel we were right. I still feel we were right. Maybe that's a little self-righteous, but it's about equal rights, you know, it's just about being a human being. I don't waver from any of our positions, really. I really feel strongly about them still. And I guess with maturity and experience, the more it reinforces, you know, what we believed in.
Right. Because your work that you do now is really an extension of that.
Oh, absolutely.
What's your formal title, stuff?
Now? Mm-hmm. CEO, president. The corporation, but then I'm also an attorney for a firm, so it's, you know, both
busy.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to stop?